I want you to put yourself in this scenario for a second. You are sitting at your desk and you're staring at a high-resolution scan of an 18th-century German church register.
Oh, the Holy Grail.
Right. I mean, you've been hunting for a specific ancestor for like months, digging through census data, ship manifests, and finally, this one register feels like the finish line.
Yeah, that moment of anticipation.
Exactly. So you find the page. The paper is all yellowed, the edges are frayed, and the ink, that old iron gall ink, it's faded to this pale, rusty brown color. And you zoom in on the specific line where your ancestor's mother should be listed. You look at the word, and it clearly reads a mentev, like MNTTEV.
Right, which obviously isn't a word.
No, or maybe it doesn't even look like letters to you. Maybe it just looks like this jagged, continuous row of spikes, like a heart monitor just going totally haywire.
Yeah, that jagged row of spikes is exactly where so many amateur genealogists just, well, they give up. Because to a modern eye, an eye that's trained on modern printed text, that word is absolute gibberish. But if you put that exact same image in front of a historian who's actually trained in the script, they don't see Montev at all.
No.
No, they look at those spikes, they process the angles, and they instantly read Mutter, the German word for mother.
I've actually tried looking at these documents myself, and it is a wildly alienating experience. It really is.
It's incredibly frustrating.
We're dealing with what you could call the handwriting problem, because scripts like German current, which, by the way, was used heavily right up until the mid-20th century, they just do not follow the visual rules that we are used to today.
Not at all.
It's aggressively cursive. It's incredibly angular. Like a lowercase e doesn't have a loop. It looks like two vertical scratches.
Yep.
And an N basically looks like a U. So if you don't have, I don't know, hundreds of hours of specialized training, millions of critical records for tracing ancestry are just entirely opaque to you.
And the scale of this bottleneck, it really cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
Because we aren't just talking about German current here.
Right, it's everywhere.
The diversity of historical handwriting traditions globally is staggering. Like, if you're tracing English roots, you hit secretary hand or court hand.
Oh, where the letters were deliberately stylized for legal documents?
Yeah,
Yes.
they made it intentionally complex. And if you're working with Middle Eastern documents, you have Arabic Nastaliq. In Eastern Europe, you've got Cyrillic Ustav.
Wow.
There are Greek scribal scripts, Hebrew scribal scripts. Every single one of these represents a locked door. The oldest, most historically rich records detailing human existence are just trapped behind handwriting that the vast majority of modern people cannot decipher.
Which brings us to the core mission for today's deep dive. We are unpacking the Max Recognition Schema.
It's a big one.
It is. Because for anyone deeply invested in genealogy, uncovering what these historical documents actually say, that's the whole game.
That is the game, yeah.
So today, we really need to understand how this specific schema captures the complex process of reading these impossible scripts. Because, and this is the kicker, we aren't just relying on human historians anymore.
No, we're not.
We are throwing massive artificial intelligence models at this problem too. So Max Recognition is designed to create a verifiable, permanent record of how a document was read, whether it was read by a human expert or a machine.
Yeah.
But here's what I am struggling to wrap my head around. Reading printed text with optical character recognition, OCR, and reading cursive handwriting with handwritten text recognition, HTR, they feel like completely different universes of technology to me. How do you build a single tracking system for both of those?
Well, you start by totally rejecting the premise that they need to be treated completely differently.
Really?
Yeah, that is a foundational design choice in Max Recognition. I mean, yes, OCR and HTR do tackle different physical formats, but the output goal is identical, right?
Converting an image into text.
Exactly. Converting an image of text into a machine-readable string of characters. So the engineers, they didn't build two separate schemas. They built one unified framework.
Okay.
Over 90% of the fields in this schema are shared. It doesn't matter if you're scanning a printed 1920s newspaper or an 18th century handwritten diary.
But wait, the system has to know what kind of document it's dealing with, right? Because a newspaper scan is obviously totally different from a diary.
It does know, and it handles that pretty elegantly with a routing field called recognition type.
Recognition type, okay.
Yeah, think of it as a traffic cop. If the recognition type is tagged as HTR for handwriting, the schema requires fields like script type.
Which is where you'd say, like, current or secretary hand.
Exactly. Current, Gothic, Fracture, whatever. It also asks for an approximate century field.
Oh, because handwriting evolves over time.
Right, and the system needs to route that image to a specialized model that was actually trained on that specific era.
That makes sense.
Now, if the traffic cop sees OCR for printed text, it routes to fields like font type or scan DPI to assess the visual quality of the print. But the underlying machinery that captures all that data, it's identical.
Okay, so the schema basically routes the document to the right place. But I want to talk about who, or I guess what, is actually doing the reading.
The transcriber.
Right, because a transcription is only as good as the transcriber. If I am a volunteer and I submit a transcription of a current document, how does the system know I'm not just, you know, guessing randomly? Is there some kind of user profile it tracks?
There is, and it's housed in an object called the contributor.
The contributor object.
Yeah, and this is a really brilliant piece of architecture, I think, because it uses a single object shape, but it dynamically shifts based on a discriminator.
Meaning what exactly?
The system asks one simple question first. Is the contributor a human or an AI?
Let's start with the human side. What does it actually track about me if I log on to transcribe something?
If the discriminator is set to human, the schema captures your credentials, your specialty scripts, your specialty languages, and regions.
Okay, standard profile stuff.
But the most critical field it logs is records transcribed.
Wait, why does a database care how many records I've done? Is it just keeping score for, like, a volunteer leaderboard?
No, not at all. It acts as a mathematical reputation score.
Oh, wow.
This isn't just decorative metadata for a user profile, you know. It actively impacts how the system weights your transcription in the grand scheme of things.
Give me an example of how that works.
Sure. Let's say we have a terribly messy current document. You transcribe it. The system checks your profile and explicitly sees current listed in your specialty scripts.
Okay.
And the system also sees you have successfully transcribed, let's say, 15,000 records without documented errors.
I'm a pro.
You're a pro. So your transcription carries immense mathematical weight. Now imagine a brand new contributor with 50 records and no listed specialties attempts that exact same document. Their reading will absolutely be recorded, but it will carry significantly less weight when the system tries to determine the absolute truth of that document.
So it's basically a cumulative signal of trust. That makes total sense. But what happens when you flip that discriminator from human to AI? Because an AI obviously doesn't have a college degree in history or, you know, a volunteer leaderboard.
Right. The fields change entirely to capture the anatomy of the AI.
Okay.
Instead of human credentials, that AI contributor object captures the model name, the model provider, the model version, and crucially, the model type.
What do you mean by model type? I know we hear a lot of acronyms thrown around in this machine learning space.
It specifies the exact architecture of the neural network. So is it a transformer? Is it an LLM vision model? Is it a CNN LSTM?
Okay, I'm going to need you to pause and translate this. Let's break those down for someone who, you know, understands genealogy but isn't a machine learning engineer. What is the actual difference between these models when they look at a page?
Let's take them one by one. A CNN LSTM, which stands for convolutional neural network, combined with long short-term memory, that's an older but very reliable architecture.
Okay.
The CNN part scans the image looking for shapes and edges, like the curves of a letter.
Just visual processing.
Right. And the LSTM part remembers the sequence. So it says, I just saw a shape that looks like an M, so the next shape is highly likely to be a vowel. It reads sequentially.
Okay, so shape detection plus sequence memory. What about a transformer?
Transformers kind of revolutionized everything. A transformer model doesn't just read left to right. It uses what's called an attention mechanism to look at the entire sentence.
Oh, wow.
Or even the entire page all at once. It understands context. If it sees a blurry word, it looks at the surrounding words to deduce what the blurry word must be, very much like a human reader does.
Right, using context clues.
Exactly. And then you have LLM vision models, large language models with visual capabilities.
The big ones.
The massive ones. These systems don't just recognize text. They understand the semantic meaning of the document. They know they are looking at a 19th century baptismal record, and they understand the logical structure of how those specific records were historically written.
So knowing the model type tells you fundamentally how the AI, quote unquote, thought about the image.
Exactly. And the schema takes it a step further with a field called fine-tuning.
Fine-tuning, okay.
Yeah, you can take a baseline transformer model like TOCR and train it on a highly specific data set. Say you feed that model 100,000 transcribed church records strictly from the Württemberg region in Germany.
Okay.
It adapts to the specific quirks, the common surnames, and the scribal habits of that one specific region. It will vastly outperform a general-purpose model on Württemberg records.
That makes sense.
And the schema captures that exact training history, so we know why the model is so accurate.
I totally see the value in tracking the training data, but I was reading through the schema documentation, and there is a field for the AI called prompt. It literally stores the text prompt given to the AI. Now, if I tell an AI, you are a specialist in 18th century German handwriting, transcribe exactly what you see versus extract the names and dates from this document, obviously the output changes.
Statistically, yeah.
But if it's just a string of text, why does the schema need to permanently store the prompt alongside the transcription? That feels a bit like, I don't know, saving the instructions to a microwave every time you heat up food.
I'd argue it's much more like a chemistry lab report.
Okay, how so?
In traditional science, if you don't publish your exact methodology, the temperatures, the chemical measurements, the timing your experiment is not reproducible. It's basically invalid.
Right.
For a large language model, the prompt is the methodology. If we don't know the exact system prompt, the user instructions, and even the temperature setting, which controls how creative or strict the AI is allowed to be, we cannot audit how the AI arrived at its conclusion.
Oh, I see.
By storing the prompt, the schema makes the AI's transcription completely reproducible and accountable forever.
You are creating a permanent paper trail for the machine's thought process. I love that. Which actually leads us to a really practical problem. We know exactly who or what is reading the document, but these are physical, historical objects.
Very fragile ones, usually.
Exactly. What happens when the human or the AI hits a massive physical obstacle? A coffee stain from 1840, a tear in the page, or just a giant smudge of ink right in the middle of a crucial surname?
This is the exact intersection where max recognition abandons the traditional, rigid rules of genealogy and does something genuinely revolutionary.
Let's define the traditional rule first, just because anyone who has done archival work knows it very well. It's incredibly strict.
It is.
If you can't read a letter, you do not guess. You leave it blank or you type out the word illegible in brackets.
The old norm is completely binary. Yeah. You either observe the ink perfectly or you throw your hands up and mark it illegible. Yeah. And when you do that, the data is effectively dead. Max recognition introduces a much more nuanced approach through an array called word confidences and a specific field called reading type. So instead of a binary choice, the transcriber human or machine can label exactly how a specific word was produced.
How many options do they have for that?
There are several. You can tag a word as observed, which means the ink is clear, and you read it directly from the image without any doubt.
Okay, straightforward.
But if there is damage, you can tag it as inferred context, meaning you logically filled in the blank based on surrounding entries.
Nice.
There is inferred pattern, which you use when you know the standard naming conventions of the era. And there is partial read, for when the first few letters are visible, but the rest are just deduced.
Okay, I have to pause here and play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
Isn't guessing incredibly dangerous when we're talking about historical records? If you build a system that actively encourages transcribers to make inferences, aren't you just inviting people to pollute the historical record with a bunch of assumptions? I mean, genealogy is about verified truth, not educated guesses.
I get that fear, but think about the mechanics of how a master genealogist actually works. The strict binary rule actually loses truth. Let's walk through a specific example from the source material, the Maxwell example.
Okay, let's hear it.
Imagine you have a severely water-damaged entry in a parish register. You're staring at a surname. The first two characters, M-A, are clearly visible.
Got it.
The rest is completely obscured by a dark water stain.
Under the old rules, I type M-A, open bracket, illegible, close bracket. And anyone searching for the name Maxwell never finds that record. Ever.
Correct. The data just vanishes into the void. But a trained genealogist doesn't just stare at the stain. They zoom out, they look at the rest of the page, perhaps the whole section of the register.
Right.
And they notice that the surname Maxwell appears five other times on that exact same page, referring to a large local family.
So they are building contextual evidence.
They are. And then they look incredibly closely at the water stain itself. At character offset 3, so the third letter, they could just barely make out the height and spacing of the pen strokes beneath the stain.
Oh, wow.
They know the handwriting style, and they can see that the strokes are consistent with an XW. They're absolutely not consistent with an RK, which basically rules out the name Markwell.
That is some serious detective work.
It is. Max recognition says, do not throw away that brilliant deductive work just because of a rigid rule. Make the inference, but explicitly label it as an inference.
Okay, but how does this system distinguish a highly researched deduction like that from just a wild guess?
First, you assign it a lower confidence score. Instead of a 1.0 for perfect observation, maybe you give it a 0.78. But more importantly, the schema requires you to use a field called inference notes whenever you use a tag other than observed.
So the transcriber literally has to show their math.
Exactly.
They have to type out, like, characters 1 and 2 read MA clearly. Characters 3 through 7 are water damaged. However, 5 out of 6 other surname entries on this page read Maxwell.
Yep.
Furthermore, the visible letterform height at offset 3 is consistent with XW and inconsistent with RK.
Precisely. The inference is preserved, it is cleanly labeled, and, most importantly, it is fully auditable. A researcher 10 years from now can look at that transcription, read the notes, look at the image, and decide for themselves if they agree with the logic.
That's brilliant.
You aren't polluting the record with assumptions. You are adding a transparent, highly structured layer of professional analysis that would otherwise just be lost entirely.
I'm fascinated by the idea of capturing that brain work in a machine-readable format. It's so cool. But it does bring up a massive complication.
What's that?
Well, we have human experts and highly tuned AI models making these detailed, mathematically weighted inferences. What happens when two brilliant current specialists look at the exact same messy water damage script and come to completely different conclusions?
Right.
Like, volunteer A thinks it says Maxwell, but volunteer B thinks it says Markwell.
That is where the concept of cross-run consensus comes in. Max recognition anticipates disagreement. It handles this using a field called consensus group ID.
Yep.
This allows the system to link multiple independent transcriptions of the exact same document image together. And crucially, there is a flag called is independent.
Why does independence matter so much here?
Because of confirmation bias. If you are transcribing a document and you can see what the previous 5 people guessed, you are highly likely to just agree with them.
Especially if the text is really hard to read. Yeah.
Exactly. The Baldé's independent flag explicitly states whether a run was performed completely blind. This prevents the system from double counting correlated results. If 5 people independently arrive at the same difficult conclusion without seeing each other's work, that is a massive signal of truth.
Let's dig into how that truth is calculated. If 2 independent experts working totally blind both infer the name is Maxwell, the overall confidence of that reading shoots up.
Right.
But if volunteer A says Maxwell and volunteer B says Markwell, how does the system resolve the fight?
Well, the system flags the disputed reading for review. But we need to highlight a core design principle of the MaxGen ecosystem here. The consensus calculation, the actual math resolves the dispute, does not live inside the Max recognition schema.
Wait, really? It just records the conflict? That feels like taking the minutes at a very contentious meeting. You write down who yelled what, but the meeting minutes don't decide who is right.
Close, but with much higher stakes. Think of a court reporter in a trial.
Max recognition is the court reporter.
Yes.
It sits in the corner and perfectly impartially records exactly what every witness testified. It logs whether the witness was a human or an AI. It logs their credentials, their confidence score, and their inference notes explaining why they believe what they believe.
Exactly.
But the court reporter doesn't hand down the verdict.
Spot on. The matching engine is the jury. The matching engine is a totally separate computational layer that looks at all the transcripts, weighs the evidence, factors in the mathematical reputation of the contributors we talked about earlier, and does the complex algebra to reach a verdict on what the word most likely is.
That makes a lot of sense. Store the raw evidence in one place, compute the verdict elsewhere.
It keeps the schema clean and the computation incredibly flexible. Think about the future. 5 years from now, the matching engine, the jury, might get a radically smarter algorithm for calculating consensus.
Oh, true.
Because the schema preserved all the raw data perfectly, the new engine can just reevaluate the exact same court transcripts and maybe reach a more accurate verdict. You never have to go back and retranscribe the physical document.
Let's bring this down to the user level for a second. Let's say I am sitting at home searching for my ancestor. The transcriber wasn't totally sure about the spelling because of a smudge. The matching engine jury is still weighing the evidence and says it's 60% likely to be Maxwell, but 40% likely to be Maxwell ending with an IL.
Okay.
If I type Maxwell into a search bar, how does the system know to show me the specific disputed record?
That functionality is handled by an array called searchable variants.
Searchable variants.
Yeah, this field holds every spelling under which this specific physical record should be findable in a search index.
Yeah.
It includes the primary transcribed text, but it also scoops up those alternative readings for uncertain words. So, if the reading is genuinely visually uncertain between Maxwell with two L's and Maxwell ending in IL, both of those variations are injected into the searchable variants array.
Oh, that's smart.
So if you search for either spelling, the record will surface.
I need to clarify something here, though, because for genealogy folks, this sounds a lot like another tool we've discussed before, MaxName.
Right.
MaxName handles name variations. How is searchable variants different from the MaxName schema?
It's an essential distinction. Let's use the source materials examples here.
Yeah.
MaxName handles historical semantic equivalence.
Meaning what?
It is the system that understands that Maxwell and the older spelling Makeswell are fundamentally the same family name.
Right.
Or that Müller in German is the equivalent of Miller in English. It knows the linguistic evolution of names.
So MaxName knows the history and meaning of the name itself, completely separate from any physical document.
Correct. The searchable variants array, on the other hand, handles the optical uncertainty of a specific word written on a specific physical piece of paper.
Okay.
It isn't making a historical judgment. It is simply saying, we literally do not know if the fading ink on this specific page forms the word Maxwell or Maxwell. The two mechanisms work in tandem. MaxName handles historical meaning. Max recognition handles visual reality.
Visual uncertainty versus semantic equivalence. That is a really great way to frame it. I want to touch on one last technical piece before we look at the big picture.
Sure.
By tracking all these different runs, human and AI, the system must be generating an enormous amount of performance data. How does it know if an AI model is actually getting better?
It measures them against ground truth documents.
What are those?
These are historical documents that have been painstakingly manually transcribed by a panel of top-tier human experts who all agree that their transcription is 100% accurate.
Okay, the gold standard.
Exactly. The system feeds the image of that document to an AI model and then compares the AI's output against the ground truth using standard mathematical metrics.
What kind of metrics?
The two main ones are character error rate, CER, and word error rate, WHERE. Character error rate looks at every single letter. It counts how many substitutions, deletions, or insertions the AI made compared to the perfect human transcript.
Got it.
A model with a 2% CER is remarkably accurate. A model with a 15% CER is really struggling. Word error rate does the exact same thing, but at the whole word level.
And because max recognition tracks everything so granularly down to the model type, the fine-tuning data, and the script type, it can basically build a massive automated quality map over time.
It creates a self-improving ecosystem. The system learns that a specific tree OCR model fine-tuned on Württemberg records has a 1% CER on 18th century current, but a 20% CER on 19th century English secretary hand.
Right.
So it automatically dispatches the hardest German documents directly to that specific model, or it writes the hardest English documents to the human volunteer with the highest reputation score in secretary hand.
And that ecosystem is really why this matters so deeply. When you step back and look at the genealogical community, for decades, thousands of volunteers have spent countless hours hunched over microfilm and digital scans.
It's true labor of love.
It is. They force themselves to learn current, to learn Cyrillic Ustav, to squint through water stains and fading ink. They did this massive labor specifically to unlock history for the rest of us.
It is an incredible act of crowdsourced historical preservation. Genealogy relies entirely on the generosity of people willing to do the hard work of reading old documents and sharing their findings.
And what max recognition finally provides is a permanent, mathematically structured home for all that labor. Every single transcription, whether it's done by a board-certified professional genealogist, a dedicated local history enthusiast on their weekend, or a massive AI model trained on 100,000 church records, gets a pristine provenance record.
Yes, exactly.
You know exactly who did it, when they did it, what their skill level was, what their confidence was, and exactly what logic they used to arrive at their conclusion. The work is finally citable. It is completely trackable. And most importantly, all that effort is never lost to an illegible bracket again.
It honors the work by ensuring it endures in a format that both human researchers and future machines can continually learn from.
Speaking of machines learning from humans, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We talk about how max recognition forces human transcribers to write down their deductive logic in that inference notes field.
Right, showing their math.
They are explaining how they used context, page layout, and historical naming conventions to read a damaged word. By doing that thousands of times, we are organically creating a massive structured database of human genealogical reasoning.
That's a profound shift.
It really is. What happens when the AI models of the future train not just on the final transcribed words, but on those detailed notes? What happens when we feed an AI the contextual logic and intuition of a master human genealogist?
It's mind-blowing to think about.
Are we eventually going to teach machines not just how to recognize a letter, but how to genuinely deduce and investigate history like a master historian? It's a fascinating frontier.
Oh.
Keep digging into those records, and we'll see you next time.